sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the death of kings. How some have been deposed, some slain in war, some haunted by the ghosts they have deposed, some poisoned by their wives, some sleeping killed, all murdered. For within the hollow crown that rounds the mortal temples of a king keeps death his court. And there the antic sits, scoffing his state and grinning at his pomp, allowing him a breath, a little scene to monarchize, be feared, and kill with looks, infusing him with self and vain conceit, as if this flesh which walls about our life were brass impregnable. And humor thus comes at the last, and with a little pin bores through his castle wall. And farewell, King.
Today, and again next Sunday at the same time, the Columbia Workshop, radio's foremost laboratory of writing and production techniques, has the honor to present the Old Vic Theatre Company of London, England. Their first radio appearance in the United States, a special hour and one-half arrangement of the tragedy of King Richard III by William Shakespeare, with Laurence Olivier in the role of Richard and Ralph Richardson as the narrator. The musical score is original with and is conducted by Herbert Menges. The Old Vic Theatre Company is directed by John Burrow, who has for these workshop broadcasts the association of Richard Sandville of CBS. The text was prepared for radio by James and Elizabeth Hart.
Richard III is the final play in Shakespeare's great historical cycle, which depicts the rise and fall of the royal house of Plantagenet. It is the bloodiest chapter in a chronicle which abounds in bloodshed, the darkest scene in a dark panorama of hate, treachery, and ambition turned to mania. Yet the greatest part of Richard III's action takes place in the first period of rare peace that England had known for a century. The interminable wars with France were over. Just over, too, was the long and terrible struggle for the English crown between the Lancastrian and the Yorkist branches of the royal house, called the Wars of the Roses. If Richard III touches deeper chords of terror than the preceding plays, the reason is not to be found in the greater violence of the historic events it traces, but in the character of Richard himself. Here is Richard.
Now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer by this sun of York, and all the clouds that lowered upon our house in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. Now are our brows bound with victorious wreaths, our bruised arms hung up for monuments, our stern alarums changed to merry meetings, our dreadful marches to delightful measures. Grim-visaged war has smoothed his wrinkled front, and now, instead of mounting barbed steeds to fright the souls of fearful adversaries, he capers nimbly in a lady's chamber to the lascivious pleasing of a lute. But I, that am not shaped for sportive tricks, nor made to court an amorous looking glass, I that am rudely stamped and want love's majesty to strut before a wanton ambling nymph, I that am curtailed of this fair proportion, cheated of feature by dissembling nature, deformed, unfinished, sent before my time into this breathing world, scarce half made up. And that so lamely and unfashionable, that dogs bark at me as I halt by them. Why, love forswore me in my mother's womb. And for I should not deal in her soft laws, she did corrupt frail nature with some bribe to shrink mine arm up like a withered shrub, to heap an envious mountain on my back, to shape my legs of an unequal size, to disproportion me in every part, like to a chaos or an unlicked bare whelp that carries no impression like the dam. Why, I, in this weak piping time of peace, have no delight to pass away the time, unless to spy my shadow in the sun, and descant on mine own deformity. Then, since this world affords no joy to me, but to command, to check, to all bear such as are of better person than myself, I'll make my heaven to dream upon the throne, and whiles I live to account this world but hell, until my misshaped trunk that bears this head be round impaled with a glorious crown. But yet I know not how to get the crown, for many lives stand between me and home, and I, like one lost in a thorny wood that rents the thorns and is rent with the thorns, seeking a way and straying from the way, not knowing how to find the open air, but toiling desperately to find it out, torment myself to catch the English crown, and from that torment I will free myself, or hew my way out with a bloody axe. Why, I can smile and murder whiles I smile, and cry content to that which grieves my heart, and wet my cheeks with artificial tears, and frame my face to all occasions. I'll drown more sailors than the mermaid shall. I'll play the orator as well as Nestor, deceive more slyly than Ulysses could, and like a Sinon, take another Troy. I can add colors to the chameleon, change shapes with Proteus for advantages, and send the murderous Machiavel to school. Can I do this, and cannot get a crown? Tut, were it further off, I'd pluck it down.
Richard in the year 1471, his portrait painted by his own hand. He could look into himself and see his bitter, twisted heart, his brilliant, twisted mind, as clearly as he could see his withered, twisted body in a looking glass. And though he was only Duke of Gloucester, King Edward's youngest brother, his succession barred by Edward's two sons and by the Duke of Clarence, his second eldest brother, it was already on the throne his sights were set. Though he was without wealth or property, he was already scheming to acquire both by marrying the woman who had more cause than anyone in the world to hate him. This woman was Anne, the daughter of the great Earl of Warwick, whom Richard's troops had slain in battle, daughter-in-law of Henry VI, the Lancastrian king, whom Richard had murdered in the Tower of London, widow of Henry's son, the Prince of Wales, whom Richard and his brothers had taken prisoner and stabbed to death. And now, Richard is about to commence his loveless wooing of this lady. Regard him as he stands in the shadow of a London doorway and watches her approach down the narrow street. and is escorting an open coffin in which lies the body of Henry VI, her father-in-law and Richard's victim. She's bound for the burial ground at Chertsey.
In a hearse, whilst I, a while, obsequiously lament the untimely fall of virtuous Lancaster. Poor key cold figure of a holy king, pale ashes of the house of Lancaster, thou bloodless remnant of that royal blood, be it lawful that I invocate thy ghost to hear the lamentations of poor Anne, wife of thy Edward, of thy slaughtered son, stabbed by the selfsame hand that made these wounds. Oh, cursed be the hand that made these holes. Cursed the heart that had the heart to do it. Cursed the blood that let this blood from hence. Come. Now towards Chertsey with your holy load, taken from Paul to be interred there.
Stay, you that bear the cross, and set it down.
What black magician conjures up this fiend?
Villain, set down the cross, or by St. Paul I'll make a course of him that disobeys.
What? Do you tremble? Are my guards afraid?
Man, a dog, stand up when I command.
Alas, I blame you not. For you are mortal, and mortal eyes cannot endure the devil. Vaunt, thou dreadful minister of hell.
Sweet saint, for charity be not so cursed.
Foul devil, for God's sake, hence, and trouble us not. Villain, thou knowest no law of God nor man. No beast, O fierce, but knows some touch of pity.
But I know none, and therefore am no beast.
Oh, wonderful when devils tell the truth.
More wonderful when angels are so angry. Vouchsafe divine perfection of a woman to leave this keen encounter of our wits and fall somewhat into a slower method. Is not the causer of the timeless deaths of these Plantagenets, Henry and Edward, as blameful as the executioner?
Thou wast the cause, and most accursed effect.
Your beauty was the cause of that effect. Your beauty that did haunt me in my sleep to undertake the death of all the world so I might live 1 hour in your sweet bosom.
If I thought that, I tell thee, homicide, these nails should rend that beauty from my...
These eyes could not endure that beauty's rack. You should not blemish it if I stood by. As all the world is cheered by the sun, so I by that. It is my day, my life.
Black night or shade thy day, and death thy life.
Curse not thyself, fair creature. Thou art both. He that bereft thee, lady, of thy husband, did it to help thee to a better husband.
Name him. Where is he?
Here. Why dost thou spit at me?
Would it were mortal poison for thy sake.
Never came poison from so sweet a place.
Never hung poison on a fowler toad. Out of my sight, thou dost infect mine eye.
Teach not thy lips such scorn, for it was made for kissing, lady, not for such contempt. My tongue could never learn sweet smoothing words. But now thy beauty is proposed my fee, my proud heart sues and prompts my tongue to speak. If thy revengeful heart cannot forgive, lo, here I lend thee this sharp-pointed sword, which if thou please to hide in this true breast and let the soul forth that adoreth thee, I lay it naked to the deadly stroke and humbly beg the death upon my knee.
Oh.
Nay, do not pause, for I did kill King Henry, but 'twas thy beauty that provoked me. Me up.
Rise, dissembler. Though I wish thy death, I will not be thy execution.
Then bid me kill myself, and I will do it.
I have already.
That was in thy rage. Speak it again, and even with the word, this hand which for thy love did kill thy love shall for thy love kill a far truer love.
Oh, I would I knew thy heart.
It figured in my tongue.
I fear me both are false.
Say then, my peace is made.
That shalt thou know hereafter.
But shall I live in hope? Vouchsafe to wear this ring.
To take is not to give.
Look how my ring encompasseth thy finger. Even so thy breast encloseth my poor heart. Wear both of them, for both of them are thine. Bid me farewell.
Tis more than you deserve. But since you teach me how to flatter you, imagine I have said farewell already.
Woman in this humor wooed? Was ever woman in this humor won? I'll have her, but I will not keep her long. What, I that killed her husband and his father? Hath she forgot already that brave prince, Edward her lord, whom I some 3 months since stabbed in my angry mood at Tewkesbury and made her widow to a woeful bed? A sweeter and a lovelier gentleman the spacious world cannot again afford. My dukedom to a beggarly denier, I do mistake my person all this while. Upon my soul she finds, although I cannot, myself to be a marvelous, proper man. Albeit charges for a looking glass, and entertain a score or two of tailors to study fashions, to adorn my body. Since I am crept in favor with myself, I will maintain it with some little cost. Shine out, fair sun, till Clarence still breathes. Edward still lives and reigns. Clarence, beware. Thou keep'st me from the light. But I will sort a pitchy day for thee. For I will buzz abroad such prophecies that Edward shall be fearful of his life, and then to purge his fear, I'll be thy death. Clarence, thy turn is next, and then the rest, counting myself but bad, till I be best. Clarence! Clarence, good day. What means this armed guard?
His Majesty,
I beseech your graces both to pardon me. His Majesty hath straitly given in charge that no man shall have private conference of what degree soever with your brother.
You may partake of anything we say.
His Majesty hath appointed this conduct to convey me to the tower.
But what's the matter, brother? May I know?
Because my name is George.
Hmm?
He hearkens after prophecies and dreams, and from the crossroad plucks the letter G, and says a wizard told him that by G his issue disinherited should be. These I learn, and such like toys as these have moved his highness to commit me now.
It is not the king that sends you to the tower. It is the queen, his wife, Clarence. 'Tis she that tempers him to this extremity. We are not safe, Clarence. We are not safe.
By heaven, I think there is no man secure but the queen's kindred.
I beseech your grace to pardon me, and withal forbear your conference with the noble duke.
We are the queen's abjects and must obey. Brother, farewell. I will unto the king. Meantime, this deep disgrace in brotherhood touches me deeper than you can imagine. Well, your imprisonment shall not be long. I will deliver you. Meantime, have patience.
I must before.
Farewell.
Farewell.
tread the path that thou shalt ne'er return. Simple, plain Clarence. I do love thee so that I will shortly send thy soul to heaven, if heaven will take the present at our hands.
I am a lord. Here come to have the warrant that I may be admitted where he is.
I have it here. But, sir, be sudden in the execution, with all obdurate. Do not hear him plead, for Clarence is well spoken and perhaps may move your heart to pity if you mark him.
Tut, tut, my lord, I shall not stand to prate. Talkers are no good doers. Be assured.
Your eyes drop millstones when fools' eyes drop tears. I like you, lad. About your business straight, go dispatch.
What wouldst thou, fellow? And how camest thou hither?
I would speak to Clarence, and I came hither on my legs. Let him see this commission and talk no more.
I am by this commanded to deliver the noble Duke of Clarence to your hands. I will not reason what is meant hereby, because I will be guiltless of the meaning. The Duke's within asleep. And here are the keys. I'll to the king and signify to him that thus I have resigned to you, my charge.
You may, sir. 'Tis a point of wisdom. Fare you well.
Keeper, give me a cup of wine.
You shall have wine enough, my lord. Anon.
In God's name, what art thou?
A man, as you are.
Thy voice is thunder, but thy looks are humble.
My voice is now the king's, my looks mine own.
How darkly and how deadly dost thou speak? Your eyes do menace me. Why look you pale? Who sent you hither? Wherefore do you come? To murder me.
Aye.
You scarcely have the heart to tell me so. Wherein, my friend, have I offended you?
Offended me, you have not. But the king...
I shall be reconciled to him again.
Never, my lord. Therefore, prepare to die.
If you are hard for me... Go back again, and I will send you to my brother Gloucester, who shall reward you better for my life than Edward will for tidings of my death.
You are deceived. Your brother Gloucester hates you.
Oh, no. He loves me, and he holds me dear. Go you to him from me.
Aye. So I will. Look behind you, my lord. Take that. All this will not do. I'll drown you in the Malmsey, but within.
You have heard Act One of a special hour and one half Columbia Workshop arrangement of William Shakespeare's King Richard III, presenting the Old Vic Theatre Company of London, England, in their first American radio appearance, and starring Laurence Olivier as Richard. Act Two will follow immediately after a 15-second pause for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
First,
With his audacious suit of wealthy Anne, a suit swiftly to be brought to its conclusion in marriage. Then, with the murder of his brother, the Duke of Clarence, Richard has launched his progress towards the throne. True, his older and one remaining brother, Edward, still reigns as king. But Richard well knows Edward is only living out a lingering death. True, Richard must count the Queen, Elizabeth, as his bitter antagonist, and with her, her common-born kinsmen, Dorset, Rivers, Grey, and Vaughan, whom she has raised to noble stations. But Richard knows that the Queen and her faction have themselves powerful enemies in the older nobility, chiefly in the Duke of Buckingham, Richard's own cousin. He can count on Buckingham as an ally, and he can hope for some support from Hastings, the Lord Chamberlain, just released from the Tower, blaming his imprisonment upon the Queen at Richard's sly suggestion. True, there are two small sons of the King and Queen, but Richard will deal with them in their turn. Meanwhile, hard on Clarence's death, he'll go to court, there to meet the King and Queen, Rivers, Dorset, Grey, Buckingham, and Hastings.
Good morrow to my sovereign king and queen. And princely peers, a happy time of day.
Happy indeed as we have spent the day. Gloucester, we have done deeds of charity, made peace of enmity, fair love of hate between these swelling hate-incensed peers.
A blessed labor, my most sovereign lord, among this princely heap. If any here by false intelligence or wrong surmise hold me a foe, if I unwittingly or in my rage have aught committed that is hardly borne by any in this presence, I desire to reconcile me to his friendly peace. It is death to me to be at enmity. I hate it and desire all good men's love. First, madam.
My lord of Gloucester.
I entreat true peace of you, which I will purchase with my duteous service. Now, of you, my noble cousin Buckingham.
Good, my lord.
If ever any grudge were lodged between us. Now, of you, Lord Rivers.
My lord.
And Lord Grey, of you.
My lord.
That all without desert have frowned on me. Dukes, earls, lords, gentlemen, indeed of all.
Why so? Now I have done a good day's work. And more in peace my soul shall part to heaven since I have made my friends at peace on earth.
A holy day shall this be kept hereafter. I would to God all strifes were well compounded. My sovereign lord, I do beseech your highness to take our brother Clarence to your grace.
Why, madam, have I offered love for this to be so flouted in this royal presence? Who knows not that the gentle duke is dead? You do him injury to scorn his cause.
Who knows not he is dead? Who knows he is?
Oh, in heaven, what a world is this?
Is Clarence dead? The order was reversed.
But he, poor man, by your first order died, and that a winged Mercury did bear, some tardy cripple bear the countermand that came too lag to see him buried.
My brother killed no man. His fault was thought, and yet his punishment was bitter death. Who sued to me for him? Who in my wrath kneeled at my feet and bade me be advised? Who spoke of brotherhood? Who spoke of love? Who told me how the poor soul did forsake the mighty Warwick and did fight for me? Who told me in the field at Tewkesbury, when Oxford had me down, he rescued me and said, dear brother, live and be a king? Who told me, when we both lay in the field, frozen almost to death, how he did lap me even in his garment, and did give himself all thin and naked for the numb, cold night? All this from my remembrance, brutish wrath sinfully plucked, and not a man of you had so much grace to put it in my mind. The proudest of you all have been beholding to him in his life, yet none of you would once beg for his life. Oh, God, I fear thy justice will take hold on me and you and yours and mine. Come, haste,
my lord.
Help me to my closet. Oh, poor Clara.
This is the fruit of rashness. Marked you not, my cousin Buckingham, how pale did look the guilty kindred of the queen when they did hear of Clarence's death?
My lord, you do me shameful injury, falsely, to draw me in these vile suspects. And by heaven, I will acquaint his majesty of those taunts I often have endured.
What? Threat you me with telling of the king? What? Tell him and spare not. Look, what I have said I will avouch in presence of the king. Our brother was imprisoned by your means.
By him that raised me to this careful height, from that contented hap which I enjoyed, I never did incense his majesty against the Duke of Clarence, but have been an earnest advocate to plead for him.
You may deny that you were not the cause of my Lord Hastings' late imprisonment.
She may, my lord.
She may, Lord Rivers. Why, who knows not so? She may do more, sir, than denying that. She may help you to many fair preferments, and then deny her aiding hand therein, and lay those honors on your high desert.
My Lord of Gloucester, I have too long borne your blunt upbraidings and your bitter scoffs. I had rather be a country servant maid than a great queen with this condition, to be thus baited, scorned, and stormed at. Small joy have I in being England's queen.
And let him be that small. God, I beseech him. By honor, state, and seat is due to me.
This is the old queen, Margaret of Anjou, widow of Henry VI, mother of Edward, Prince of Wales, both of whom found death through Richard in the struggle which deprived the House of Lancaster of the crown and set the Yorkists upon the throne. Unexpectedly returned from England, from the exile in France, Queen Margaret now strides into the court she has so much cause to hate, and Richard greets her.
Foul wrinkled witch, what makes thou in my sight? Were thou not banished on pain of death?
I was, but I do find more pain in banishment than death can yield me here by my abode. Hear me, you wrangling pirates that fall out in sharing that which you have pilled from me. Which of you trembles not that looks on me? A husband and a son thou owest to me, Gloucester, and thou a kingdom, madam, and all of you allegiance. This sorrow that I have by right is yours, and all the pleasures you usurp are mine.
The curse my noble father laid on thee when thou didst crown his warlike brows with paper, and with thy scorn drewest rivers from his eyes, and then to dry them gavest him a kerchief steeped in the blood of Rutland, my sweet brother. His curses, then from bitterness of soul denounced against thee, are all fallen upon thee, and God, not we, hath plagued thy bloody deed.
So just is
no man that prophesied revenge for it, or Cumberland then present wept to see it.
What were you snarling all before I came, ready to catch each other by the throat? And turn you all your hatred now on me? Did York's dread curse prevail so much with heaven that Henry's death, my lovely Edward's death, their kingdom's loss, my woeful banishment, should all but answer for that peevish brat? And curses pierce the clouds and enter heaven. Why then give way, dull clouds, to my quick curses? Though not by war, by surfeit die your king, as ours by murder, to make him a king. Edward, thy son, that now is Prince of Wales, for Edward, my son, which was Prince of Wales, die in his youth by like untimely violence. Thyself a queen, for me that was a queen, outlive thy glory like my wretched self, and after many lengthened hours of grief die, neither mother, wife, nor England's queen. Rivers and Dorset, you were standers by, and so wast thou, Lord Hastings, when my son was stabbed with bloody daggers. God, I pray him that none of you may live your natural age, but by some unlooked accident cut off.
Have done thy charm, thou hateful withered hag.
And leave out thee? Stay, dog, for thou shalt hear me. If heaven have any grievous plague in store exceeding those that I can wish upon thee. Oh, let them keep it till thy sins be ripe, and then hurl down that indignation on thee, thou troubler of the poor world's peace. The worm of conscience still the gnaw thy soul. Thy friends suspect for traitors while thou livest, and take deep traitors for thy dearest friends. No sleep close up that deadly eye of thine, and let it be as some tormenting dream affrights thee with a hell of ugly devils. Thou elfish marked, abortive, rooting hog, thou that was sealed in thy nativity, the slave of nature and the son of hell, thou slander of thy mother's heavy womb, thou loathed issue of thy father's loins, thou rag of honor, thou detested...
Margaret!
Richard!
Huh?
Oh, I call thee not.
I cry thee mercy then, for I did think that thou hadst called me all those bitter names.
Right, so I did, but looked for no reply. Oh, let me make the period to my curse.
It is done by me and ends in Margaret.
Thus have you breathed your curse against yourself?
Poor painted queen, vain flourish of my fortune. Why strewest thou sugar on that bottled spider whose deadly web ensnareth thee about? Fool, fool, thou whetst a knife to kill thyself. The day will come when thou shalt wish for me to help thee curse this poisonous bunchback toad.
Peace, peace, for shame, if not for charity.
Oh, princely Buckingham, I'll kiss thy hand in sign of league and amity with thee. Thy garments are not spotted with our blood, nor thou within the compass of my curse.
Nor no one here, for curse is never past the lips of those that breathe them in the air.
I will not think but they ascend the sky and there awake God's gentle sleeping peace. Oh, Buckingham, take heed of yonder dog. Look, when he fawns, he bites. And when he bites, his venom tooth will wrinkle to the death. Oh, have not to do with him. Beware of him. Sin, death, and hell have set their marks on him, and all their ministers attend on him.
What does she say, my lord of Buckingham?
Nothing that I respect, my gracious lord.
What? Dost thou scorn me for my gentle counsel, and soothe the devil that I warn thee from? Oh, but remember this another day, when he shall split thy very heart with sorrow, and say, poor Margaret was a prophetess. Live each of you the subject of his hate, and he to yours, and all of you to God's.
My hair doth stand on end to hear her cursing.
And so doth mine. I muse why she's at liberty.
I cannot blame her. By God's holy mother, she hath had too much wrong, and I repent my part thereof that I have done to her.
A virtuous and a Christian, my conclusion.
Madam, his majesty doth call for you and for your grace and you, my noble lord.
Hastings, I come. Lord, will you go with me?
Hastings?
My lord.
What news?
The king is sickly, weak, and melancholy, and his physicians fear him mightily.
Now, by St. Paul, that news is bad indeed. Oh, he hath kept an evil diet long, and overmuch consumed his royal person. It's very grievous to be thought upon. What, is he in his bed?
He is.
Go you before, and I will follow you. He cannot live, I hope. And now may die, since Clarence is packed post-horse up to heaven. Clarence, whom I indeed have cast in darkness, I do beweep to many simple gulls, namely to Hastings, Catesby, Buckingham. And tell them 'tis the queen and her allies that stirred the king against the duke, my brother. Now they believe it. And withal whet me to be revenged on rivers born grey. But then I sigh, and with a piece of scripture tell them God bids us do good for evil. And thus I clothe my naked villainy with odd old ends stolen out of holy writ, and seem a saint when I most play the devil. Which done, God take King Edward to his mercy, and leave the world for me to bustle in.
good King Edward's death?
Aye, sir, it is true.
Then, master, look to see a troublous world.
No, no, by God's good grace, his son shall reign.
Woe to the land that's governed by a child.
I am not barren to bring forth complaint. All streams reduce their current to mine eyes, that I, being governed by the watery moon, may bring forth plenteous tears to drown the world. Oh, for my husband, for my dear Lord Edward.
Madam, bethink you, like a careful mother, of the young prince, your son. Send straight for him, let him be crowned. In him your comfort lives. Drown desperate sorrow in dead Edward's grave, and plant your joys in living Edward's throne.
Tis well said, my Lord Rivers. Let the prince be fetched forthwith from Ludlow with some little train, hither to London to be crowned our king.
Madam, have comfort. None can cure their harms by wailing them. So let us now determine who they shall be that straight shall post to Ludlow. Convoke the lords, and do thou sit with us to give thy counsel in this weighty business.
With all my heart, good Brother Gloucester. Come, Rivers, call the others to the chamber.
I will go seek them out, madam.
A moment, noble Gloucester. Well? Speak then, Buckingham.
My lord, whoever journeys to the prince, for God's sake let not us two stay behind. For on the way, I'll sought occasion to part the queen's proud kindred from the king.
My upper self, my counsel's consistory, my oracle, my prophet, my dear cousin. I, like a child, will go by thy direction. Towards Ludlow, then, for we'll not stay behind.
Madam, and in health. Last night, his highness at Northampton lay. Tomorrow or next day, he will be here.
What is thy doleful news, then?
Lord Rivers and Lord Grey are sent to Pumford. With them, Sir Thomas Vaughan. Prisoners.
Who hath committed them?
The mighty Duke Gloucester and Buckingham.
Ah, me, I see the ruin of my house. The tiger now has seized the gentle hind. Insulting tyranny begins to jet upon the innocent and aweless throne. Welcome, destruction, death, and massacre. I see as in a map the end of all. Now must I take my youngest, little York, and with him flee to sanctuary.
Oh.
sweet prince, to London. Dearest nephew, the weary way hath made you melancholy.
I want more uncles here to welcome me. Mm.
Those uncles which you want were dangerous. Your grace attended to their sugared words, but looked not on the poison of their hearts. God keep you from them and from such false friends.
God keep me from false friends. But they were none. I thought my mother and my brother York would long ere this was met us on the way. Oh, fie, what a slug is Hastings that he comes not to tell us whether they will come or no.
And in good time, here comes the sweating lord.
Welcome, Lord Hastings. Will my mother come?
On what occasion? God he knows, not I. The queen, your mother, and your brother York have taken sanctuary. The tender prince would fain have come with me to meet your grace, but by his mother was perforce withheld.
Aye, what an indirect and peevish course is this of hers. Lord Cardinal, will your grace persuade the queen to send the Duke of York unto his princely brother presently? If she deny him, then Lord Hastings, from her jealous arms, pluck him perforce.
My Lord of Buckingham, if she be obdurate to my entreaties, God in heaven forbid we should infringe the holy privilege of blessed sanctuary.
You break no sanctuary in seizing him. The benefits thereof is always granted to those whose dealings have deserved the place and those who have the wit to claim the place. My nephew neither claimed it nor deserved it, and therefore, in mine opinion, cannot have it. Oft have I heard of sanctuary men, but sanctuary children, ne'er till now.
My Lord of Gloucester, you all rule my mind. Come on, Lord Hastings, will you go with me?
Our loving brother. Welcome, dread lord. So must I call you now.
How fares the noble Duke of York, our nephew?
Well, gentle uncle.
Now that your brother's here, my gracious prince, myself and my good cousin Buckingham will to your mother to entreat of her to meet you at the tower and welcome you.
What? Will you go to the tower, brother?
Our uncle Gloucester needs will have it so.
I shall not sleep in quiet at the tower.
Why? What should you fear?
Marry, my Uncle Clarence, angry ghost. My grandam told me he was murdered there.
I fear no uncle's dead.
Nor none that live, I hope.
And if they live, I hope I need not fear. Come, Brother York, and with a heavy heart thinking on them, go I unto the tower.
This completes Act Two of the Columbia Workshop Special Hour and One-Half Presentation of the Old Vic Theatre Company of London, England, in William Shakespeare's Richard III. Act Three will follow after a 15-second pause for local station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
With Anne's property firmly in his grasp, his brother Clarence assassinated, King Edward dead, the Queen separated from her kinsmen, and the two boy princes, Wales and York, her royal sons, detained in the Tower of London, Richard, now Lord Protector of the realm, leaps to faster and even bloodier action. he dispatches an order to Pomfret Castle in the north, and the Queen's henchmen, who are his captives there, are promptly put to death. Then Hastings, the Lord Chamberlain, is forced to make a choice of loyalty between Richard and the little princes in the tower. And Hastings, when he chooses the late King Edward's heirs, at once finds himself preposterously accused of using witchcraft to shrink Richard's long, withered arm, whereupon he too is murdered. Now, as we meet Richard once again, we hear him plotting with his ally, the Duke of Buckingham, to remove all chance of public support for the little princes in the tower by launching slanders against their legitimacy.
Go to the guild call, Cousin Buckingham. There, at your meetest vantage of the time, doubt the legitimacy of Edward's children. And should there needs to say yet more, tell them that when my mother got with child of that insatiate Edward, my princely father then had wars in France, and by true computation of the time found that this Edward was not his begot. Yet, touch this sparingly as to afar off, because, my lord, you know, my mother lived.
Doubt not, my lord, I'll play the orator, as if the golden fee for which I plead were for myself.
If you thrive well, bring them to Baynard's castle, where you shall find me well accompanied with reverend fathers and well-learned bishops.
I go, and towards 3 or 4 o'clock, look for the news that the guild hall affords.
What say the citizens? Touched you the legitimacy of Edward's children?
I did. His own adulterous birth likewise, as being got your father then in France. Withal, I did infer your lineaments, being the right idea of your father, both in your form and nobleness of mind. Indeed, left nothing fitting for your purpose untouched or slightly handled in discourse. And when my oratory drew towards end, I bade them that did love their country's good cry, God save Richard, England's royal king.
And did they so?
No.
Hmm?
So God help me, they spake not a word, but like dumb statues or breathing stones, stared on each other and looked deadly pale. But haply some 10 followers of my own at lower end of the hall hurled up their caps, and some 10 voices cried, God save King Richard. And thus I took vantage of these few. Thanks, gentle citizens and friends, quoth I. This general applause and cheerful shout argues your wisdom and your love to Richard. And even here break off and came away.
Oh, will not the mayor then and his brethren come?
The mayor is here at hand. Intend some fair. Play the maid's part. Still answer nay and take it. Go within. The mayor knock.
I go. And if you plead as well for them as I can say nay to thee for myself, no doubt we bring it to a happy issue.
Welcome, Lord Mayor and gracious citizen. Welcome, my Lord of Buckingham. I think the Duke will not bespoke with all. Here comes his servant. How now, Catesby? What says your lord to my request?
He doth entreat your grace, my noble lord, to visit him tomorrow. Or next day. He is within with 2 right reverend fathers, divinely bent to meditation.
Return, good Catesby, to the gracious Duke. Tell him, myself, the mayor and aldermen, in deep designs in matter of great moment, are come to have some conference with his grace.
I'll signify so much to him straight.
Ah, my lord, this prince is not an Edward. He is not lolling on a lewd day bed, but on his knees at meditation, not dallying with a brace of courtesans, but meditating with 2 deep divines, not sleeping to engross his idle body, but praying to enrich his watchful soul. Happy were England would this virtuous prince take on his grace the sovereignty thereof. But sure, I fear we shall not win him to it.
Marry, God defend his grace should fail. Nay.
Look up where he stands between two clergymen. Two props of virtue for a Christian prince. Famous Plantagenet and gracious prince, lend favorable ear to our request, and pardon us the interruption of thy devotion and right Christian zeal.
I do beseech your grace to pardon me, who, earnest in the service of my God, deferred the visitation of my friend. But leaving this, what is your grace's pleasure?
Your gracious self to take on you the charge and kingly government of this your land. Not as protector, steward, substitute, or lowly factor for another's gain, but as successively from blood to blood, your right of birth, your empery, your own. For this, consorted with the citizens and by their vehement instigation, in this just cause, come I to move your grace.
Your love deserves my thanks, but my desert, unmeritable, shuns your high request. First, if all obstacles were cut away and my path were even to the crown, as the right revenue and due of birth, yet so much is my poverty of spirit, so mighty and so many my defects, that I would rather hide me from my greatness than in my greatness covet to be hid. But God be thanked, there is no need of me, and much I need to help you where there need. The royal tree hath left us royal fruit, which mellowed by the stealing hours of time will well become the seat of majesty. Now, on him I lay that you would lay on me, the right and fortune of his happy stars, which God defend that I should wring from him.
You say the princes are your brother's sons? So say we too, but not by Edward's wife. A beauty waning and distressed widow, seduced the pitch and height of his degree to base declension and loathed bigamy. By her, in his unlawful bed, he got young Edward, whom our manners call the prince. Then, good my lord, take to your royal self this proffered benefit of dignity.
Do, good my lord, your citizens entreat you. Oh, make them joyful. Grant their lawful.
Alas, why would you heap these cares on me? I am unfit for state and majesty. I cannot, nor I will not, yield to you.
Yet, whether you accept our suit or no, your brother's son shall never reign our king. And in this resolution here, we leave you. Come, citizens, we will entreat no more.
No. Call them back. Sweet prince, accept their duke. If you deny them, all the land will rue it.
Will you enforce me to a world of care? Call them again. I am not made of stone, but penetrable to your kind entreaties, albeit against my conscience and my soul. Cousin of Buckingham and sage, grave men. Since you will buckle fortune on my back, I must have patience to endure the load. But if black scandal or foul-faced reproach attend this sequel of your imposition, your mere enforcement shall acquittance me from all the impure blots and stains thereof, for God doth know, and you may partly see how far I am from the desire of this.
God bless your grace. We see it and will say it. Amen. Long live King Richard!
Long live King Richard!
England's worthy king!
England's worthy king!
Long live King Richard!
Long live King Richard!
Long live King Richard!
Reached it now. Richard has reached the throne.
and surrounded with the usual complement of lords, spiritual and temporal, of all the usual pomp and circumstance, is invested with the royal scepter and diadem at the Abbey at Westminster. But never a more uneasy head wore a crown, and never a throne mounted by a king cast a darker shadow towards the future.
Stand all apart. Cousin of Buckingham, give me thy hand. Thus high by thy advice and thy assistance is King Richard seated. But shall we wear these glories for a day, or shall they live and we rejoice in them?
Still live they, and forever let them last.
Young Edward lives. Think now what I would speak.
Say on, my loving lord.
Why, Buckingham, I say I would be king.
Why, so you are, my thrice-renowned liege.
Am I king? It is so. But Edward lives. Cousin, thou wast not wont to be so dull. Shall I be plain? I wish the prince is dead, and I would have it suddenly performed. What sayst thou now?
Your grace may do your pleasure.
Tut, tut, thou art all ice. Thy kindness freezes. Say, have I thy consent that they shall die?
Give me some little breath, some pause, dear lord, before I positively speak in this. I will resolve you herein presently.
The deep revolving witty Buckingham no more shall be the neighbor to my counsel. Hath he held out with me so long untired, and stops he now for breath? Well, be it so. Catesby.
My gracious sovereign.
Knowest thou not any whom corrupting gold will tempt unto a close exploit of death?
I know a discontented gentleman whose humble means match not his haughty spirit. Gold were as good as 20 orators and will no doubt tempt him to anything.
What is his name?
His name, my lord, is Tyrrell.
And bloody act is done. The most arch deed of piteous massacre that ever yet this land was guilty of. Thus, girdling one another, lay the gentle babes. Their lips were four red roses on a stalk, which in their summer beauty kissed each other. A book of prayers on their pillow lay, which almost changed my mind. I smothered the most replenished sweet work of nature that from the prime creation e'er she framed.
Kind Tyrrell, am I happy in thy news?
If to have done the thing you gave in charge beget your happiness, be happy then, for it is done.
But didst thou see them dead?
I did, my lord.
And buried, gentle Tyrrell?
The chaplain of the tower hath buried them. But where, to tell the truth, I do not know.
Tender babes, wilt thou, O God, fly from such gentle lambs and throw them in the entrails of the wolf? When didst thou sleep
when such a deed was done.
Oh, to God, that the inclusive verge of golden metal that must round my brow, where red-hot steel to sear me to the brain. Anointed, let me be with deadly venom, and die ere men can say, God save the queen.
To feed my humor, wish thyself no harm. Poor soul, I blame thee not.
No, why? When he that is my husband now came to me as I followed Henry's course, this was my wish. Be thou, I quoth, accursed, for making me so young, so old a widow. And be thy wife, if any be so mad, more miserable by the life of thee than thou hast made me by my dear lord's death. No, ere I could repeat this curse again, within so small a time, my woman's heart grossly grew captive to his honey words, and proved the subject of mine own soul.
Who have any cause to mourn but I?
If ancient sorrow be most reverend, give mine the benefit of seigneury. I had an Edward till a Richard killed him. I had a Harry till a Richard killed him. Thou hadst an Edward till a Richard killed him. Thou hadst a Richard till a Richard killed him.
Oh, Margaret, thou prophesied the time should come that I should wish for thee to help me curse that bottle spider, that foul bunchback toad.
Richard yet lives. But at hand ensues his piteous and unpitied end. Earth gapes, hell burns, fiends roar, saints pray to have him suddenly conveyed from hence. Cancel his bond of life, dear God. I pray that I may live to say, the dog is dead.
For King Richard to stand against the fury of such hate as this would be the marvel of his or any other age. In it are the elements to shape his remaining days. From it springs his final and most potent antagonist, Henry, Earl of Richmond, last survivor of the old Lancastrian line, long in exile across the Channel in Brittany. All but disregarded as a serious claimant to the crown, all but forgotten during the popular reign of the late Edward, upon the brutal killing of the little princes in the Tower, this quiet earl now becomes the hope and rallying point of all the British nobles, sickened by King Richard's bloody rule, shamed of their own complacence. Buckingham is among the first to join the rebels, though in his case fear, not justice, is the motive. And from this time on, every day the disaffection mounts. And every day messengers bring tidings of the rebellion's growing strength to an increasingly uneasy Richard.
My lord, I hear the Marquis Dorset fled to Richmond in those parts beyond the sea where he abides.
Good news or bad that thou comest in so bluntly?
Bad news, my lord. Ely is fled to Richmond, and Buckingham backed with a hardy Welshman is in the field, and still his power increases.
How now, what news?
Mighty sovereign, on the western coast rideth a puissant navy. To the shores throng many doubtful, hollow-hearted friends, unarmed and unresolved to beat them back. 'Tis thought that Richmond is their admiral.
As I remember, Henry VI did prophesy that Richmond should be king when Richmond was a little peevish boy. How chance the prophet could not at that time have told me, I being by, that I should kill him? Richmond. When last I was at Exeter, the mayor in courtesy showed me the castle and called it Rougemont, at which name I started, because a bard of Ireland told me once I should not live long after I saw Richmond.
My gracious sovereign, now in Devonshire, Sir Edward Courtney and his brother there, with many more confederates, are in arms.
In Kentville, the Guilfords are in arms. My lord, the army of Fred Buckingham.
Out on the owls, nothing but songs of death.
My liege, the Duke of Buckingham is taken.
Someone take order, Buckingham be brought straightway to Salisbury and the headsman's block.
That is the best news. That the Earl of Richmond is with a mighty power landed at Milford is colder news, but yet they must be told.
Away towards Salisbury. While we reason here, a royal battle might be won and lost. Then fiery expedition be my wing. Jove's Mercury and herald for a king.
Pitch our tents, even here in Bosworth Fields. Up with my tent. Here will I lie tonight. But where tomorrow? Well, all's one for that. Up with the tent. Come, noble gentlemen, let us survey the vantage of the ground. It calls for some men of sound direction. Let's lack no discipline, make no delay. For, sirs, tomorrow is a busy day.
This place is Bosworth Field, a broad and gentle plain lying athwart the British Midlands. And in this twilight hour, all sky and space and calm. And now, as he settles for the night, should Richard lay his ear against the ground, he could scarcely fail to catch the distant rumble of his adversary's cunning. The Earl of Richmond is crossing England in a day, spurring himself and his men towards King Richard, Bosworth Field, and tomorrow.
And my most loving friends, bruised underneath the yoke of tyranny, the wretched, bloody, and usurping boar that spoiled your summer fields and fruitful vines, swills your warm blood like wash and makes his trough in your embowelled bosoms, this foul swine is now even in the center of this isle, near to the town of Leicester, as we learn. From Tamworth thither is but one day's march. In God's name, cheerly on, courageous friends, to reap the harvest of perpetual peace by this one bloody trial of sharp war.
Every man's conscience is a thousand men to fight against this guilty homicide.
I doubt not that his friends will turn to us.
He hath no friends but what are friends for fear, which in his dearest need will fly to us.
All for our vantage, then. In God's name, march. True hope is swift and flies with swallow's wings. Kings it makes gods, and meaner creatures... King!
What is the clock?
It's supper time, my liege. It's 9 o'clock.
I will not sup tonight. What, is my beaver easier than it was, and all my armor laid into my tent?
It is, my liege, and all things are in readiness.
Ratcliffe,
my lord.
Fill me a bowl of wine. Give me a watch. Saddle white sari for the field tomorrow. Look that my staves be sound, but not too heavy. Catesby.
My lord.
Give me a bowl of wine. I have not that alacrity of spirit, nor cheer of mind that I was wont to have. Bid my guard watch. Leave me. Catesby.
Lord.
About the mid of night, come to my tent and help to arm me. Leave me, I say. Oh, coward conscience, how thou dost afflict me. The lights burn blue. It is now dead midnight. Cold, fearful drops stand on my trembling flesh. What do I fear? Myself? There's none else by. Richard loves Richard. That is, I am I.
Bloody battle, end thy days. Think on Lord Hastings, despair and die.
First was I that helped thee to the crown. The last was I that felt thy tyranny. Oh, in the battle, think on Buckingham and die in terror of thy guiltiness.
Is there a murderer here?
No. Yes. I am.
Then fly.
What, from myself? Great reason why. Lest I'd avenge. What, myself upon myself? Alack, I love myself. Wherefore? For any good that I myself have done unto myself? Oh, no. Alas. I rather hate myself for hateful deeds committed by myself. I am a villain. Yet I lie am not. Fool, of thyself speak well. Fool? Do not flatter. My conscience hath a thousand several tongues, and every tongue condemns me for a villain. Perjury. Perjury in the highest degree. Murder. Stern murder in the direst degree. All several sins, all used in each degree. Throng to the bar, crying, "Oh, guilty! Guilty!" I shall despair. There is no creature loves me. And if I die, no soul shall pity me.
Nay, wherefore should they? Since that I myself find in myself no pity to myself.
Hello.
Who's there?
My lord, it's us. The early village cock hath twice done salutation to the morn. Your friends are up and buckle on their armor.
Oh, Catesby, I have dreamed a fearful dream. What thinkest thou? Will our friends prove all true?
No doubt, my lord.
Oh, Catesby, I fear.
I fear.
Hey, good my liege, be not afraid of shadows.
By the Apostle Paul, shadows tonight have struck more terror to the soul of Richard than can the substance of 10,000 soldiers armed in proof and led by shallow Richmond.
It is not yet near day. Come, go with me. Under our tents I'll play the eavesdropper to hear if any mean to shrink from me.
Good morrow, Richmond.
Good morrow, noble lord.
How have you slept, my lord?
The sweetest sleep, the fairest boding dreams that ever entered in a drowsy head have I since your departure had, my lord. How far into the morning is?
Upon the stroke of 4.
Why then, 'tis time to arm and give direction. More than I have said, loving countrymen, the leisure and enforcement of the time forbids to dwell on. Yet, remember this. God and our good cause fight upon our side. The prayers of holy saints and wronged souls like high-reared bulwarks stand before our faces. Richard accepts. Those whom we fight against had rather have us win than him they follow. For what is he they follow? Truly, gentlemen, a bloody tyrant and a homicide. One raised in blood and one in blood established. One that hath ever been God's enemy. Now, if you fight against God's enemy, God will in justice ward you as his soldiers. Then, in the name of God and all these rights, advance your standards, draw your willing swords. For me, the ransom of my bold attempt shall be this cold course on the earth's cold face. But if I thrive, the gain of my attempt, the least of you shall share his part thereof. Sound drums and trumpets, boldly and cheerfully. God and St. George!
Richmond and Victory!
Who saw the sun today?
Not I, my lord.
Then he disdains to shine. For by the book he should have braved the east an hour ago. A black day will it be to somebody. Catesby?
My lord?
The sun will not be seen today. The sky doth frown and lower upon our army. I would these dewy tears were from the ground. Not shine today? What is that to me more than to Richmond? For the selfsame heaven that frowns on me looks sadly upon him.
Arm, arm, my lord, the foe vaunts in the fields.
Come, battle, battle, Caparis and my horse. Go, gentlemen, every man to his charge. Let not our babbling dreams affright our souls, for conscience is a word that cowards use, devised at first to keep the strong in awe. Our strong arms be our conscience, swords. Our law. March on. Join bravely. Let us toot pell-mell. If not to heaven, then hand in hand to hell.
Rescue! Rescue, my lord of Norfolk! Rescue!
king enacts more wonders than a man daring an opposite to every danger. His horse is slain and all on foot he fights, seeking for Richmond in the throat of death. Rescue, fair lord, or else the day is lost.
A horse! A horse! My kingdom for a horse!
Restore, my lord, I'll help you to a horse.
Slave, I have set my life upon a cast, and I will stand the hazard of the die. I think there be six Richmonds in the field. Five have I slain today instead of him. A horse! A horse! My kingdom for a horse!
And your arms be praised, victorious friends. The day is ours. The bloody dog is dead. And then, as we have obtained the sacrament, we will unite the white rose and the red. England has long been mad and scarred herself. The brother blindly shed the brother's blood. The father rashly slaughtered his own son. The son compelled, being butcher to the sire. All this divided York and Lancaster. Now civil wounds are stopped. Peace lives again. That she may long live here, God say, amen.
Long live King Henry! Long live King Henry! Long
The Columbia Workshop has presented the Old Vic Theatre Company of London, England, in a special 1.5-hour arrangement of the tragedy of King Richard III by William Shakespeare, starring Laurence Olivier in the part of Richard and Ralph Richardson as narrator. Other feature players in the cast were Joyce Redman as Queen Anne, Margaret Leighton as Queen Elizabeth, Ina Burrell as Queen Margaret, Harry Andrews as Buckingham, Sidney Taffler as Catesby, and Peter Copley as Tyrrell. Special music was composed and conducted by Herbert Mangus. The text was prepared for broadcast by James and Elizabeth Hart, and the production was directed by John Burrell, who had the association of Richard Sandville of CBS. Richardson, who was the narrator in today's broadcast, will have the title role of Henrik Ibsen Peer Gynt, which will be the second of the two special 90-minute Columbia Workshop presentations of the Old Vic Theatre Company of London. This repertory company is currently appearing in New York City under the auspices of Theatre Incorporated. Tune in again next week for Peer Gynt by the Old Vic Theatre Company. Your announcer is Harry Marvel.